Well, hello everybody. We're just gonna let our lovely panelists reveal themselves before I get going. There we go, and great to see you guys. Well, hello and welcome to this seminar at Multiply 2021. This is the Leader Wellbeing Seminar, and in this seminar, we're going to be looking at the unique pressures and challenges associated with planting and pioneering and offering principles and resources about how to stay healthy as a leader who is planting a church. And goodness me, what an important topic this is from the year we've just had, especially for those who have planted this year. But before we begin, let me tell you a few practical things, a bit of housekeeping. We'll be recording this session. It will be available in the future to watch via the digital platform ccx.media. The only people visible will be me and our speaker and panelists. If you post a question in the question box, it won't be visible in the recording. If we mention your question, we will only mention the first names of delegates so that we can comply with GDPR. To ask a question today, please put it into the question box, which is usually at the bottom of your Zoom screen. If your question is already in the question box, then do click the like button by it so that it gets upvoted and is then more likely to be answered by our speakers sooner. Please use the chat function to chat and then the Q&A feature for questions. And please do share anything you find interesting from today with others on social media using the hashtag MultiplyX2021 and the handle at GregoryCenterCCX. I'm your host, Paul. With me today are Becky, Karen, and Ness. Ladies, before we go any further, can I please invite you each to introduce yourselves? Becky, could we start with you, please?
Good afternoon. Yes, it's great to be here. My name's the Reverend Becky Rogers, and my husband and I planted a church in East London 11 years ago now, and so that's why I'm here to talk about it. At the moment, I lead the church of my husband, who's the incumbent, and I also run a charity, the London Centre for Spiritual Direction, and numerous other things. So that's me.
Thanks, Becky. Karen.
Yeah, hi everybody. I'm Karen Openshaw, and I run my own consultancy, encouraging, enabling, equipping others, particularly those in leadership. Developed a fresh expression in 2012, and until recently, I was on the board for Fresh Expressions Limited, the charity, and I'm passionate about leader wellbeing.
Fantastic. And finally, Ness.
Hi, I'm Ness Wilson. I lead Pioneer UK, which is a network of new churches, and I'm the team leader of Open Heaven Church in Loughborough, which I planted many years ago with a bunch of friends, and we've since sent church plants out from our church here in Loughborough.
Fantastic. Wow, what a team we've got today for this session. We're going to start our time by hearing a short talk and presentation from Becky, and we'll then hear responses from Karen and Ness before then moving into a conversation between the four of us and also you guys. So please do send in those questions. I think one's come in already. We'd love to hear from you, the delegates. So do submit those questions. But first of all, Becky, would you like to kick us off, please, with what you've got to share today? Becky, I think you're on mute if you'd thank
There we go.
you.
That's a rookie error, isn't it? Haven't done that for a few months. It's great to be here to talk to you about such an important thing, although it's very odd just kind of speaking to my computer and not seeing all you in front of me. Leader well-being is such an important aspect. If we as leaders aren't well, then whatever we're leading won't be well either. So how do we stay well? So I just want to share a few ideas. What are the unique pressures of church planting leadership? When I spoke on one occasion about the pressures of church planting leadership, somebody challenged me and said, "Isn't it the same for all leadership?" And on one hand it is, but there's a few unique challenges for the church planter. One of them is often funding expectations. Many church planters are sent off with a degree of funding, whether from a diocese, from a funding body, or from individuals. And that funding comes with expectations that when you're particularly in the early days, you're desperately trying to fulfill and meet. Of course, we have our own expectations. How many of us have high expectations of our abilities and what we want to produce and what we want to do? We want to perform well for God. We want to be able to witness well for him. And therefore, sometimes those expectations mixed with others can become a heavy weight on our shoulders. There's also a massive intensity at the beginning. Whether you're starting a church plant where you go in just you and a couple of others, whether you take a team of people into a church, there's that focus on the beginning that when you're transferring over to a leadership, there is an intensity, but not quite to the degree, the effort. And one of the big things that I've noticed when I talk to church planters is comparison. Many dioceses and areas and groups bring church planters together to help them support one another. And that's a double-edged sword. It's great to hear that people are struggling like you, but when you're struggling, it's not great to hear that people are doing well. And the danger is we can look at the person who's planting down the road or the other side of the town and look and see and perceive how well they're doing. And so we have all this expectation, our own, others, and intensity and compassion on our shoulders, more so than maybe we would have done if we were moving in leadership to a fully established church. Paul says in Corinthians, "Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize." When we go as a leadership in a church plant, we want to be running to get the prize. The prize, of course, is to be able to stand there before Jesus and say, "I have done my best. I have fulfilled what you've asked me to do, and I am your servant." And we want to be there. The danger is that everything in church planting, the pressures, the expectations, can affect us in a negative way. We're like the runner who's everybody's expecting them to win, who falls at the first hurdle, who trips on the starting blocks. There's so much expectation that the danger is we actually jeopardize ourselves by everything that's being weighed on us. The key thing is better run in a way that we make the end. Do we want to complete? Do we want to finish the task that God has set us in a way that we're still upright and standing? We're not crawling over the finishing line, exhausted and absolutely no good to anyone else. So using this analogy of a race, I want to ask, what race do we want to run? When a runner sets up to train, prepare and race, they need to know what race they're running. Is it a sprint? Is it a sprint where you get everything, you train actively and you run your hardest for 100 metres and then that's it? You collapse at the end, you rest and then you retrain. 100 metres, putting your all into that tiny moment. But if you think you're running a sprint, but you're actually put in for a marathon, you're never going to make it. You put all your effort into that first bit. And then after about 110 metres, you've got nothing left for the other however many miles there is. So are you running a marathon? The training's same in some ways, it requires commitment, but it's different. Preparing yourself is different and running the race is different. Well, when I thought about this and I was praying about this, I felt that actually church planting is not like running a race of a sprint or a marathon. It's more like an endurance race. I don't know whether you've seen any of these around. We had a young lad who we knew a number of years ago who's entered one of the toughest races on the planet, these endurance races, which are about putting your all into it for a long period of time. The race he entered was called the Revenant, which is a race in New Zealand, 120 miles, 16,000 metres of vertical ascent and about 60 hours. They do lap two in 30 hours, then 45 hours for lap three. There's checkpoints which they need to beat But then how they navigate the gaps between them is up to them. And all they have is a map and a compass, no GPS, no watches. And to me, that felt like the story of a church plant. It's not a sprint. It's an endurance race. When you go into a church plant, you don't want to just throw yourself into it for 1 year and then be worn out at the end. You want to be there for 5 or 10 years, and you want the church to be there longer when you've left. We're planting something to endure, to grow and to develop. But if we enter it like a sprint, we'll never survive. And so as I began to think about how church planting was like an endurance race, I looked up a little bit about some of the things you needed to do to run an endurance race. And it felt very similar to church planting. Prepare. You have to prepare well for an endurance race. You have to eat and train. It's the same in leadership. We need to prepare well. We need to eat and we need to train. Many of us have been on training courses for church planting. We've read, we've studied, we've eaten. We've eaten the word, the scriptures. We've eaten healthily, hopefully, as well. We've prepared well. We also need to be equipped. On an endurance race, what you have is what you have in your backpack. You don't have any more or any less. All you've got is what you carry with you. We need to make sure that our backpack is fully equipped with what we need. And some of that is the obvious things that keep us well as Christians. Prayer. Reading the scriptures, studying the scriptures, meeting with other Christians, fellowship, fun. Those kind of things are the things we need to make sure that are in our backpack, making sure that we are equipped. One of the other things I feel with church planting and leaders' well-being is about pacing ourselves. Again, the expectation at the beginning, the pressure to perform quickly, means that we're not very good at pacing ourselves. We tend to throw 120% into the first 6 months. By the end of the 6 months, we're exhausted. We need to pace it. We can't do everything the first day. Plan, pace, think, rest, nap. Sunday afternoons are great for naps. Take a rest. We need our sleep. But we need our sleep and our rest so that we can carry on going. Not like a sprint that we finish the race and we're dead, but so that we nap. One of the things in endurance racing is that the contestants are encouraged to nap while they're racing. When I was looking into this, there was one racer who said he decided he wasn't going to nap in the first section because he wanted to push through. And then after an hour, he'd realized he was so tired that he'd literally walked around in a circle and come back to where he was. Because he didn't stop and rest, his own ability to think clearly, to plan, and to progress had disappeared. How often do we as leaders forget to rest well? Oh, I don't need my day off this week. I've just got this little bit of work to do. Oh, there's a meeting I need to be at. That's 1 week. The next week, oh, well, I didn't have it last week, so I've got more work to do this week. We're not resting well. I sometimes feel that we as leaders need to be reminded that God thought rest was so important that he made it one of the Ten Commandments. Sunday isn't a Sabbath for many of us because we're working. So when is our Sabbath? To rest regularly and to take short rests during the week, maybe slightly longer rests during the month and good long rests over the year. My husband and I have a model of rest that works for us. We always take our day off. And sometimes that means we miss things we'd like to be part of. Because actually, it's important to have that family time and that time to stop. About every 7 weeks, we take a short week off. We have Monday to Friday. And we often go out of parish during that to stop and to rest. We also, my husband and I, will have quiet days within that where we go away separately to spend time with God for a day, sort of 10 till 4. And then in the summer holidays, we take 3 weeks off. The first time the bishop said to us, take 3 weeks off, I said, I can't do that, 3 weeks. And yet it's so important to stop, to reconnect with our family, to reconnect with ourselves, and to reconnect with creation. We're an urban inner city parish. And for me, that 3 weeks, going and spending 10 days by the sea, reconnecting with the beauty of creation is so important. And listen to yourself. We need to listen to ourselves. As leaders, I think one of the biggest gifts that we can do to for our congregation is to know ourselves. What are your red flags? What are the things that you go to when you're not coping? What are the things that show you that actually something's out of balance somewhere and you need to rest, or you need to stop, or you need to go back to the Bible, or you need to just reassess what's going on? Do you know yourself well enough? And that very much is in tandem with the listen to your support team. In the endurance race, at these checkpoints, sometimes it's the support team that say to the racer, you cannot go on. They are able to see the exhaustion. They are able to see the dangers where the runner themselves is in the middle of it and cannot see it. Do you have a good support team around you? Do you have a spiritual director, somebody safe that you could go to and say, do you know, I don't know whether I believe this anymore? In that moment when it's all got too much, you can be completely yourself with. Do you have somebody who can speak into your life and say, I'm worried about you? Sometimes that's if we're blessed enough to be married, that's our husband or wife. If we're blessed enough to have close friends who are supporting around us, then that's listening to them. Listen to our support team. Make sure you've got somebody who has permission to speak into your life to say, stop, what are you doing? And listen to them. Hebrews says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. We have to remember when we're running this race, we are surrounded by the cloud of witnesses, those who are cheering us on. And for me, that's one of the big things as leaders' well-being is the companions, the personal trainer, like I said, the spiritual director, the mentor, the person who's speaking truth into your life. You must have somebody who you can be completely yourself with. You can take off the masks and be honest. The fitness class, well, that's like a learning community, a group of other people, maybe hanging out with other church planters, hearing what they're doing, sharing ideas, as long as it's a healthy one. There's nothing worse than a fitness class where everybody else is twice as fit as you and you don't feel you can do it and you end up opting out because you feel so intimidated, or a fitness class where you're so much fitter than them and you're never pushed. It's making sure you've got those peers, whether it's a learning community, whether it's a couple of people that you go down the pub with and have a drink or a coffee and a cake and compare notes and have ideas together. Rowan Williams talks about the Christian journey being very much like that epic journey in Lord of the Rings, the journey that Frodo has to take. And in some ways, it's similar in terms of church planting. There's one person carrying the ring, and yet there was the 9 companions of the ring who ensured that that happened. Surround yourself with the company. Surround yourself with people who will cheer you on, who will keep you true to what you want to be, who will call out your rubbish and will affirm and encourage you as well. We don't have to do this on our own. We're called into the body of Christ to be part of a body. And finally, this is what I like to say to all church planters, and I think it was really important for us in the first 6 weeks when we were planting. Jesus said to Peter, I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. Jesus builds the church. When you're in that intensity thinking it's all going wrong, I've made a mistake, Jesus builds the church. We are given the responsibility for nurture and care, but Jesus builds the church. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to hearing some of your questions.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much, Becky. There was so much there, and we have some questions already bubbling up. But before we get to the questions, we'd love to hear from our other panelists. So, Karen, would we be all right to head over to you and just to reflect on that?
Yeah, sure. So Becky ended with, now I say to you that you are Peter, which means rock, and upon this rock I will build my church and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. And when she mentioned this at our pre-conference meet, it was a real light bulb moment for me. I will build this church, not me, not you, Jesus. How many of us are guilty of thinking that the responsibility for building church is ours? I certainly know I was, at great cost. I wondered how different things might have been if I'd lived out of these words. I was always the archetypal activist. I pioneered a number of projects between 2008 and 16, all really exciting, but they took a huge toll on my health. I was diagnosed with ME in 2011 and fibromyalgia in 2017. So what are some of the learnings I'd like to pass on? Most Becky's already said. Before acting, I would advise discernment and dialogue, listening to God and trusted others. If what you're being asked to do looks impossible to do, then you may achieve it, but you might burn out. I did. Make sure structures are in place to support you before you sign up. Find accountability partners, spiritual accompaniers, people to pray with you and for you. Regular supervision. Time to be still and know that He is God. Prioritize self-care. Have a real understanding of loving your neighbor as yourself. Be kind to you as well as to others. Buy a wall planner. Really practical. Make sure breaks, holidays, retreats are on there. Use colours so it's visual. Walk, pray, lots. And I commend Christian mindfulness to you. It's been transformational for me. I felt it was really important today for me to be vulnerable because I hoped that that would encourage you. God really does use all things for good for those who love Him. And I know that without the failures, because believe me, that's what they've felt like, I wouldn't be in a position to be able to encourage, enable and equip others to thrive. And now what I teach has more integrity because I try to practice what I preach. It says in Isaiah, whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it. Don't give up. God is right there, loving you. And when we slow down enough to hear, guiding you. And as Becky said, remember, building the church is Jesus's role. Keep running the race, but make sure you're yoked to Him. So He sets the pace and you never feel alone.
Thank you so much, Karen, and for being so vulnerable in what you shared as well. Ness, would we be able to hear from you, please?
Yeah, of course. So I want to pick up on one of Becky's points about listening to yourself. And I think if you're a church planter or a pioneer, the chances are that your spiritual gifting mix is high around evangelistic and apostolic gifting and probably a bit lower on pastoral gifting than the average church leader. And so to listen to yourself means to understand the things that give you energy, and they're likely to be activities that are around growth, change, breaking new ground, training others, sending others, multiplying. And the things that will drain you of energy are likely to be complicated pastoral situations or people expecting or demanding you to be their personal pastor and have availability for long chats as and when they need them. And I think to listen to yourself means to work out quickly what energizes you and what drains you. And try, if you can, to make sure that about 80% of your time as a church planter and a pioneer is doing what energizes you. There will always be 20% of what you have to do with your time or things you don't enjoy doing. That's life. But if classic pastoral ministry drains you, I think you need to, number one, create the expectations of what kind of leader you are, that you're mission focused, that you're a planter, you're a pioneer, and that you believe in a culture of everybody playing to their strengths, which leads on to you being able to say what you can do and what you can't do, and appointing a pastoral team. You know, there's often volunteers who've got clear pastoral and mercy gifts, and make it the norm that people go to the pastoral team. You will still get drawn in as a kind of a team leader, but at least it's filtered. And so as a church planter, you get to create the culture. That's one of the great advantages of being a planter. You can't complain about the church culture because you're the one who's created it. So create one that works for you to run the race for the long haul. That means understand people's expectations of leaders and where it needs to be changed, then you need to change that. As people join your church, be really clear around what leadership is and what it isn't. As people are commissioned into other roles around you, those who are clearly gifted in admin or pastoral, you know, make sure that you're pointing people to others. And as you talk about leadership, then you create the culture as to what's expected of leaders. And if you get that culture right, that will be crucial to your long-term well-being. So listen to yourself, know your strengths and weaknesses, and put people around you that fill in the gaps of your weaknesses so you don't end up getting drained in your ministry.
Wow, gosh, there's tons of gold here, isn't there? Thank you so much, Ness, Karen and Becky. Fantastic stuff. And there is a hive of activity happening in our chat, in our questions. We have about 12 to 13 minutes left. Okay, so let's run through some of these questions. Some of these we've been answering along the way. Let's have a look. There's a couple of questions here which are specific, I think, to the very start of a planter's journey, maybe like the first 6 months, where things about expectations and first impressions come into play. And those can be expectations of congregation that you may be inheriting, or a team that you've built and are taking with you if it's a revitalization. Or it could be expectations of your sending church. So, you know, maybe you're employed, you know, by the vicar, and that church is a resource church, which is then sending you out. And then maybe it's expectations that you have on yourself. It says here, in one of these questions, basically, how do we focus on it being an endurance race whilst some people's metrics are looking for quick wins, which is really hard, especially when there's funding involved. Becky, would you like to jump in on that?
I think it's really, really hard. And I think one of the things to remember is that everybody in that situation finds it hard. It's a challenge, and it's something that the funders aren't always getting it right. I think there's particularly a dynamic within some where this is a new thing that they're doing, and maybe there are others in the denomination who aren't as pro it, and so they need quick results, and it's just really difficult. It's remembering that's a tension that you're dealing with, and therefore actually being kind to yourself over it. It may also be trying to find some of the others who are in the similar situation, so that you're all, I don't know, if you're in a diocese and there's like four of you church planting, trying to sort of come together and support one another in that, so that the diocese don't end up playing one off against the other, you know, that sense of being together. But there's no easy quick win on it, I don't have a quick answer. I'd love one, but I don't think there is one.
And with regards to something that you brought up, was it Becky or Karen, and then it's come up in the questions with regards to surviving the long term, I suppose brings up how can we create things early that are sustainable, and I think that was a question that was running through a lot of church leaders' minds when COVID hit, because everyone wanted to rush in, maybe not everyone, but lots of people wanted to dive in and say, okay, great, what do we need to set up, what needs to be online, what can we be doing in the community? And all of a sudden there's a flurry of activity because everybody wants to be able to serve and get moving. But one of the questions that came up in our staff meetings was, yeah, but hang on, we need to make it sustainable because we don't know how long this pandemic is going to go on for. So in trying to answer some of the other questions, have we got any tips, guys, as to how we can create that culture of sustainability, if you like, from day one or within the first 6 months? Feel free to unmute yourselves and dive in on that one. Karen?
Well, picking up on what Becky said and what Ness has said, I do think it's about It's about structures. I know often when something new's being begun, they, you know, it's almost like carte blanche. There's not a roadmap, but there is other stuff out there. So it's about learning from others that have already done things. And it's also about establishing realistic expectations from the beginning, you know, agreeing to certain priorities, but at the same time saying, you know, well, if I'm doing this, then what's this doing? And a bit like Ness was saying about building your team, I think the most important thing for me is always your team, making sure that, you know, good leadership is about alongside leadership, isn't it? It's about equipping, encouraging, enabling, equipping others in their gifts and strengths. It's about not everybody looking to you as the leader, everybody having various roles and sometimes interchangeable. For me, that's how you create sustainability, that it's not all on your shoulders.
Thanks, Karen. Ness, did you want to come in on that one? Or, oh, sorry, Becky.
No, go on. Go on, Ness. I've spoken. Go on, Ness.
No, yeah, I think, I think there's just all the things that we've kind of been, you know, referring to around, you know, the making sure that you are working out of rest. So rest is your starting point, and then you're working out of that. I think it is so often it's about rhythms. You know, there's something about intimacy and involvement, just like breathing in and breathing out. And, you know, you can't just keep on exhaling. You have to inhale in order to exhale. You can't just keep on being the activist. You have to have the intimacy with God. It's recognizing, isn't it, like the, you know, the waves going in and out. We need to make sure that we're feeding ourselves in order then to be giving out. So I think, yeah, everything that's been said, basically. Yeah.
There's two other areas coming up in the questions and chat. I'm trying to look at both at the same time, which I think are really important. Okay, so the first is the relationship with the sending church leader. I think that's come up, and I think that's something we need to address. And then also family life, and if we have children and we're the planters, this is definitely on my mind. How do we plant a church without the kids resenting us? So let's talk about, we've got about 6 minutes left. Let's talk about the relationship with the sending church leader and how we go about the expectations between you, the planter who's being sent, and the one who is sending you. Because it looks to me from what's being said, we're in desperate need of good communication and honest conversations in that relationship.
I think
Becky,
I think there's a lot about expectation here. And I think some of it is sitting down and actually having things out over a table. You know, what are you expecting? And being able to say, hang on, that's not a realistic expectation. That's ridiculous. You know, how can I have 200 people in the room within 2 weeks when there's only 6 people there at the moment? You know, it's being really trying to be realistic, but with high faith levels. And that's sometimes where the expectation's different, is we all have different kind of faith levels. I'm married to an evangelist. He has much higher faith levels than I do. I'm more pastoral, so I have different types. And so it's having the I think often it's like in relationships, isn't it? Things fall down with unrealistic expectations or just different expectations, to talk it through and to make sure everybody's on the same level, because you can call those out at the beginning when you're not in the middle of it. And I think it is, I think one of the reasons I think Rick's plant course is so good is because in some of those people bring out things and they've got experienced church planters who can say, hang on a minute, guys, I don't want to rain on your parade, but, you know, why don't you think about just, instead of doing all that in 6 months, why don't you spread it over 2 years? You know, having the experience of wisdom. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also, I think we're seeing it now with current church leaders, maybe in more established churches, re-emerging physically throughout the end of this pandemic. And actually they're wanting to take what was church and inject it straight back in to our rhythms, when actually we're having to replant and start from further back than we were used to before the pandemic. And there's that expectation again. And sometimes I think the issue is that we're trying to imprint what other plants have done onto those that we're sending to plant. And that's where the expectation comes out, because we're not, maybe the sender hasn't taken fully into consideration the context that they're planting into. We have 4 minutes left. Can we go on, Karen?
Can I quickly come in on the family thing? Yeah, it's really, really important. When I set up the church in 2012, I took my kids out of the church that we were in order to do that. And they've never really gone back to church. So I don't want that to come over as a massive negative. But I think what I would have done is make sure that they maintained relationships. And if you've got a sending church, make sure they're maintaining relationships in there, maybe still getting engaged in some stuff through there. And just really prioritize, the wall planner really helps the colours to prioritize things like family time. So make sure that, you know, what you're doing with them isn't all about the church. That's what I would say. And don't be too hard on yourself.
I think I completely agree, Karen, is when we planted, our kids were 6 and 4, and they saw themselves as being part of the plant team. So we were talking to them about what do they want in children's church, how would they like it, and they felt very much on board with it, and are very proud and possessive about their church. I do worry whether they'll ever go to any other church, but that's a completely different problem. But I think there's something about, if you're prioritizing rest time, you're giving your family space. It is the same with somebody in the city who's working, you know, 7 days a week, 50 hours a day kind of thing. Where's the space for relationship? You know, make sure you're building relationship with your children and giving space to them. If you're having rest time, then they see that what you don't want is them to see, and I think this is the danger sometimes, is the church plant becomes another sibling, and suddenly your kids are competing with their brother or sister, the church, for your attention and your energy. And that's one of the things I think. I think for us, because we were a couple church planting, suddenly All Hallows became a bubble that was huge. You know, two people left, we had a bad week. Two people came, we had a good week. And actually, I realized that I needed to get a little bit of a connection with life that was outside All Hallows. That meant that actually the kids weren't, there wasn't a barometer of everything being around All Hallows.
Did you have a final thought to add just before I just close?
In terms of children, it's really important that you don't analyse every Sunday morning over Sunday family lunch. And I think we've been very careful that we talk very, very highly, you know, about everyone who's contributed, or just the privilege of being in our particular church culture and community. Because as leaders, you always get to hear the bad stuff first, and just protecting your children in terms of what they're hearing. Because if children see parents in pain because of the church they're leading, it will turn them off of their own relationship with God. And so there's a wisdom, you know, it requires self-control. It requires you to be kind of guarded, but you process, if you're in it as a couple, you process as a couple, you know, or you have out people outside, you're protective in terms of what your children see and hear.
Oh, guys, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much, Becky, Ness and Karen, for your thoughts and wisdom and insight. We could talk about this all day because it's so important. But sadly, we have to bring it to a close. But coming up next on this channel, we will have Darren, Mark and Claire speaking on missional coaching. They'll be talking about coaching, its principles, and why it can be so helpful for pioneers and planters. Or alternatively, hop on to one of our other 9 channels. There's such a variety of fascinating seminars happening today. But we're now going to have a few minutes intermission before we kick off our next slot at 2:20. So sit back and enjoy all that we have in store for you during the break. A great opportunity for a comfort stop or to refill your coffee as well. But see you then.